Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, January 11th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, and there's a photograph of a band of brothers. The American Legion, William F. Ernest, Post 559, Color Guard. The photo of Jay Jackson, Clarence Davis, Robbie Walker, Milton Thomas, and Richard Button Bay, posing for a photo at the News Gazette offices. This article is by Luke Taylor, titled, A Job Well Done, Color Guard Shutting Down Chapter After 20 Years of Service. For 20 years, the men of the American Legion, William F. Ernest Post, 559, Color Guard, have been showing up for their community. They presented the colors at military events, holidays, schools. They presented them at funerals and supported the families of the fallen. They did more than that. They connected with local kids, worked with local probation officers, and sought recognition for the Buffalo Soldiers and Tuskegee Airmen. Once I started it, I was going to be there for a long length of time, said Master Sergeant Jay Jackson. If I'm going to start it, I need to be in charge of it to make sure that it's done right. After 20 years, this chapter is coming to a close. Members are getting older, and the active Champaign Fire Department Local 1260 Honor Guard can fortunately fill many of the same duties. It doesn't mean the end of color guards for the American Legion, though. In the future, another group could take up the mantle and continue its legacy. This color guard was actually the second iteration of the group, but the previous one was already inactive 20 years ago, so Jackson realized the post he belonged to didn't have one. The post commander at the time was Robbie Walker, who supported the idea and told Jackson to run with it. Walker also joined the guard himself and, right up through the end, served as its public relations officer, as he had for the previous iteration. He said the group did more than just appear at veterans' funerals with the flag. We try to fill the gap, Walker said. When people are dealing with the loss of a loved one, you really don't have time to put a lot of things together. We come together as a group to facilitate that and take some of that weight off of them and show the respect that's due to the veteran and to the family. Jackson, a 26-year veteran himself, said that after returning from Vietnam, he felt that veterans weren't being provided the programs or respect they deserved. He wanted to offer what he could. He may not have initially expected to be starting a 20-year undertaking, but he had a feeling the Guard would be around for a long time. Once it went past 10 or 12 years, I knew we were locked in, he said. It was going to be that no matter what. The flag would never touch the ground. That's exactly what we've been doing for the past 20 years. The Guard saw some shifts in membership, starting out with 8 or 9 members and ending with 5, Jackson said. It don't take a lot of people to make things happen, but it needs to be done the right way, he said. Airman First Class Clarence Davis was actually a slightly late addition to the Guard, joining around 5 years after it was founded. To me, it's fulfilling because of the history that you have, Davis said. A lot of those people that passed, they were people that we knew. The history that they gave us from the time they served, it kind of gets you in the mood to want to do something for the future. If it's not for them, then we can do it for the family. Stepping away from the Color Guard will not be easy for these long-term members. They referenced former members who have passed away over the years. Saying goodbye to the Color Guard feels like saying goodbye to them again, too, in some ways, they said. Those guys were very instrumental for us keeping the thing going, Davis said. When you lose somebody, you really don't want to stop. Another thing that kept them going, he said, was the response they'd get from young people, the interest kids showed in the group when they went into schools. That's something that we're going to carry to the grave with us, Davis said. There's no other feeling like that. It's a hurting feeling, Jackson said. To end this version of the Color Guard after beginning it, they'll leave behind a legacy and an impact on the community. But it was never for thanks or praise. Whether we get it or not, we know that the job we've done is a job well done, Jackson said. When we leave the premises, the kudos we get is what we get from the heart from that family. Continuing on the front page, from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, article titled, Pride Stepping Down, Vote Set on Successor. Deputy set to take over as admin who led local pandemic response ends nearly 20-year run. This is by Jana Wersima. The Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's first ever female leader is stepping down after a nearly 20-year run. Julie Pride, who kind of worked her way through the ranks at Public Health, has been a mainstay and stalwart, said Danielle Chenoweth, chair of the health district's board, who explained that a transition has been in the works for a couple years. The board's agenda for Wednesday includes a closed session, followed by a vote to appoint Deputy Administrator Dr. Mamadou Tonkara as Pride's successor. He has a background in research, clinical work, including doing surgery, administration, epidemiology, Chenoweth said, and we are very lucky to have someone of his caliber moving into the administrative job. She added that his potential start date is February 2nd. Tonkara's salary will be determined by the board. According to health district officials, Pride first came to the agency in 1989 as a social work intern. She joined the staff in 1995 as a program consultant in the Social Services Division and project director for the Illinois Region 6 HIV Prevention Implementation Group. In 2001, she became director of the Division of HIV, STD, Tuberculosis Prevention and Management, which was later expanded to become the Division of Infectious Disease Prevention and Management. The Health Board appointed Pride as acting administrator in May 2007, with the role becoming permanent in November 2008. Chenoweth said that conversations about succession planning began during a strategic planning process 3 years ago, as the health district wanted to be proactive about planning ahead for when Pride and other members of its leadership team would reach retirement age. We've been very planful about bringing new leadership in, promoting from within, and hiring key pieces, Chenoweth said. One of the things that we did about a year ago is we wanted to bring in a deputy administrator. The person who had been in the deputy position had left and taken a job with the university. The health district launched a competitive search for the role with the intention of eventually promoting the deputy administrator to the lead position. Tonkara was chosen and joined the health district in June 2025. Originally from Mali, he has been a doctor in the United States for 12 years, Chenoweth said. He's really hit the ground running, she said. He has been very instrumental in really looking at homelessness and housing as a public health issue, which is something that is near and dear to my heart. And he was instrumental in helping Cunningham Township set up our joint shelter, which is based in the Armory, the public winter emergency shelter. According to his resume, Tonkara's education includes master's degrees in social work and public health, as well as his medical degree. Prior to joining the health district, he was the director of population health and data analytics for the Tooele County, Utah Health Department. His previous roles include senior epidemiologist and lead epidemiologist for the Tooele County Health Department. Also, global surgery scholar in residence for the Center of Global Surgery at the University of Utah. also research fellow in the Department of Surgery at the University of Utah, and COVID-19 epidemiologist for the Utah Department of Health and Human Services. Town Kara has also served as an adjunct professor at Westminster University in Salt Lake City. His background in research and epidemiology is really important because the role of public health is shifting, Chenoweth said. There's less of a need in our community for direct services like vaccinations, which you can now get at the Walgreens. And there's a lot more need for landscaping and education and supporting the entire field and all the municipalities and all the partners. She said she believes Town Kara has the expertise to bring the health district into a new role focused on prevention, anticipation, and collaborating with other partners to solve public health problems. One of the things I'm really excited about is, as an MD, as a doctor, we really needed to pull our hospital, our regional hospitals, closer to our public health planning, Chenoweth said. And so I'm really looking forward to him being able to really play more of an outreach role in helping to bring the mental health and physical health providers to the table. And inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Kristen Blackwell's idea of a fundraiser for her high school's athletic department was just a bit different than, say, a bake sale or car wash or raffle. That was clear Friday night when she and her crew at Illini Mattress lugged more than a dozen beds from Sealy to Tempur-Pedic to Stearns and Foster, from their shop on Country Fair Drive to Centennial High, transforming the North Gym into a showroom on hardwood. It's different for sure, said Blackwell, general manager at Illini Mattress and Centennial High grad, class of 95. It's an out-of-the-box way to support the athletic department. The first mattress pop-up runs 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. today at the high school and continues through January 17 at Illini Mattress. Portions of proceeds from sales during that time will benefit the Chargers. In return, student athletes are volunteering at the gym turned showroom today. Kristen's parents, Champaign Central grads Ed and Jan, who founded the business in 1990, are okay with helping a rival, as the business employs a mix of Chargers and Maroons. It's our community, Kristen said, adding she hopes to expand the unique fundraiser to other high school gyms. It's been a lot of work doing this, but a lot of fun too. In area history, in 2011, Dan Rutherford said goodbye to the Illinois Senate on Sunday, and Shane Cultra said hello. Cultra, who has been a state representative for 8 years, was sworn in as a state senator representing the 53rd District, which includes parts of Champaign, Vermilion, Livingston, McLean, Marshall, and Woodford counties, and all of Ford and Iroquois counties. He replaces Dan Rutherford, who will be inaugurated today as state treasurer. International history, today's highlight. On January 10th, 1982, San Francisco 49ers receiver Dwight Clark caught a touchdown pass from Joe Montana with 58 seconds left in the NFC Championship game, one of the most famous plays in NFL history. The catch led the 49ers to a 28-27 victory over the Dallas Cowboys and a berth in Super Bowl 16, where they defeated the Cincinnati Bengals for their first Super Bowl victory. On this date in 1776, Thomas Paine anonymously published his influential pamphlet, Common Sense, which argued for American independence from British rule. In 1860, the Pemberton Mill in Lawrence, Massachusetts, collapsed and caught fire, killing as many as 145 people. In 1863, the London Underground was born when the Metropolitan Railway, the world's first underground passenger railway, opened to the public with service between Paddington and Farringdon Street. In 1920, the League of Nations was established as the Treaty of Versailles went into effect. In 1946, the United Nations convened its first General Assembly session in London, with 51 nations represented. The proceedings defined the scope and purpose of the world body. In 2013, a series of bomb blasts in Pakistan killed more than 100 people, including dozens who died in a sectarian attack in the southwest city of Quetta. Hundreds of others were injured. And in 2017, President Barack Obama delivered his farewell address in Chicago, in which the two-term Democrat urged national unity and highlighted achievements of his presidency, including the Affordable Care Act. In community news, in the election 2026 Vermilion County, article titled Democratic Candidate for Sheriff Back on Ballot. This article is by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. The thumbs up and big smile said it all when Democratic Vermilion County Sheriff candidate Hugh Sands left the courtroom Friday afternoon. Judge Lindsay Starwalt had just reinstated Sands to the ballot, reversing the County Electoral Board's vote in November to remove him. Starwalt said there were two issues in the case, whether Sands was required to file a training certificate or waiver with his nominating petitions, and whether the waiver meant he was still qualified to serve as sheriff. Starwalt said under state law, the training waiver wasn't required to be filled at the same time as the petitions, and Sands is qualified to run, having passed the exam and met the standards for training hours, even if part-time. I feel great, Sands said. I personally believe the courts made a right decision. When I decided to do this, this is the last thing that I thought would happen. But we do live in a democracy, and since this office is political, people ought to have the right to vote for whoever they want to vote for. I knew in my heart of hearts I was qualified, he added. My county corrections training, all the law enforcement training I've had, plus I was a police chief at one time, I think that met the qualifications. Sands' wife, Melissa, looked on in support and was happy for her husband. Sands also got a hug from Circuit Clerk Melissa Quick, an electoral board member who had voted to remove him from the ballot. Quick told him he has a lot of breakfast and other campaigning to look forward to. The ruling came just in time, by Wednesday, for ballots to be printed. Early voting starts February 5th for the March 17 primary. Sands requested the judicial review of the electoral board's ruling that he should be removed from the ballot over the lack of a specific training certificate. The objection to Sands' nominating petitions had been filed by county board member Jerry Hawker. He was not present at Friday's hearing, having told the court previously that he was hospitalized this week and declined to appear via Zoom. The electoral board, comprised of Vermilion County Clerk Robin Heffern, State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey, and Quick, voted November 17th to sustain Hawker's objection to Sands' petitions and remove Sands' name from the 2026 primary ballot. Hawker said he filed the objection as a private citizen for ballot integrity. Sands retired from law enforcement 10 years ago after a 22-year career and has been working as a truck driver since. Also in community news from the Urbana City Council, titled City Taking Applications for Ward 4 Alderperson, by Janet Wersima. Urbana. The City of Urbana is accepting applications for an upcoming council vacancy. Ward 4 Alderwoman Jaya Colasetti is stepping down ahead of a planned move to another ward, with the council's February 2nd meeting set to be her last. Interested individuals can apply at go.urbanail.gov/apply-ward-4 or request a paper application at the city clerk's office or the Urbana Free Library. Paper applications can be scanned and emailed to cityclerk@urbanail.gov with the subject line City Council Application, or submit it in person at the clerk's office at 400 South Vine Street. The deadline to apply is 5 p.m. January 30th. Applicants must be eligible to vote in municipal elections, have been a resident of Ward 4 for at least 1 year, not owe any delinquent taxes, fees, or fines to the city, not be a convicted felon. Per state statute, Mayor Deshaun Williams has up to 60 days from the date of Colasetti's resignation to recommend an appointment to the council, which must then vote on the appointment within 30 days, officials said. The new alderperson will represent Ward 4 until the 2027 general election. Continuing with Kathy Reiser's mailbag, the question is, what's going into the former OSF urgent care clinic facility near Harvest Market in Champaign? The new first-line urgent care clinic opened at 2043 South Neal Street on Tuesday. Kurt Bloomstrand, MD, and his wife, Sarah Bloomstrand, RN, are the principals. If the doctor's name is familiar, it may be because he's been part of the emergency department at OSF's hospital in Urbana for many years. Sarah's background also is in emergency medicine, and she is playing a key role in clinic operations. While Dr. Bloomstrand continues to work at OSF Sacred Heart's Urbana campus, he said the new clinic is a completely separate entity, a private, independently run clinic that's locally family-owned. My wife and I are looking at our family. We have 4 kids, and we want the clinic to be a warm, welcoming place for families where they can come in and get fast, compassionate, high-quality care. The clinic offers in-house X-ray capability, send out lab testing, and point of care testing for common conditions including influenza, COVID-19, RSV, strep, pregnancy, urinary tract infections, and sexually transmitted infections. The doctor said the mid-level providers who have joined the practice include nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, all of whom have emergency medicine experience. They are well in tune to knowing sick versus not sick. Very procedural based, he said. Like the former OSF on-call practice at that location, First Line stocks some of the most commonly prescribed medications for illnesses and injuries that lead people to seek urgent care, so people don't have to go stand in line at the pharmacy. He said robust self-pay options will set First Line apart from some other urgent care practices in the area. Dr. Bloomstrand noted recent changes in the medical insurance landscape, both locally and nationally, and said, "We can offer a great price point for self-pay options for those high-deductible plans or those that don't have insurance. We are currently contracting with most major insurance plans commonly used in the Champaign-Urbana area. At this time, we are in-network with Medicare and Aetna, and we expect to be in-network with additional plans soon. If their insurance plan is not yet in-network, they may still be seen as a self-pay patient. Our team is happy to help verify coverage and discuss options prior to their visit," Dr. Bloomstrand said. For now, the clinic is open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., and on Saturdays and Sundays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Temporary signs are up with permanent signage on the way. An open house or grand opening may be announced once the practitioners settle into a routine. And the next question is, I see postmarks will now be applied when a piece of mail is first processed by automated equipment at a regional postal center, not necessarily the day you drop it in the mail. Can I still get a dated hand cancel at my local post office? The reader noted that being able to prove the date of mailing can be important for some pieces of mail, tax returns, bill payments, etc. Delayed postmark application could even disenfranchise some voters who wait until the very last minute to mail their ballots. The good news is that, yes, customers can still ask for a hand cancel, a dated postmark applied by hand at any USPS retail counter when handing their mail piece across the counter in person, according to Postal Service spokesperson Tim Norman. Virtually all letters or flats sent by individuals using stamps, such as cards, letters, and tax returns, receive a postmark. If a customer wants to ensure that a mail piece receives a postmark and that the postmark aligns with the date of mailing, the customer may take the mail piece to a post office, station, or branch and request a manual, local postmark at the retail counter when tendering their mail piece during the retail counter's business hours. Norman said the Postal Service also offers certified mail or registered mail service for purchase at its retail counters. If a mailer purchases these services, the mailer will get a receipt that includes tracking information. While some national news outlets recently have carried stories about the current postmarking process, Norman said that media coverage does not signal a change in postmarking procedures with regard to how or what we postmark, but is instead intended to improve public understanding of the information postmarks convey when in the course of operations they are typically applied and their relationship to the date of mailing. I asked Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons if current United States Postal Service postmarking procedures will affect how his office conducts vote-by-mail operations for the March 17th primary election. He said even with a 14-day window after Election Day to process all provisional and vote-by-mail ballots, the ballot still must be postmarked on or before Election Day. I am not aware of any state-led initiatives to make changes to the grace period, Ammons said. The State Board of Elections has increased its online education via social media as part of their voter information campaigns. He also said the Champaign County Clerk's Office is asking any voter who votes by mail, if possible, to return their ballots to one of the 11 drop boxes located all over Champaign County. When voters use the drop boxes to return their ballots, there is no postage cost, thus an accumulated savings for voters and taxpayers. And also, the recent picture of the outlet mall in Tuscola made it look like all the stores are gone. Is anything still open there? Brian Moody, executive director of the City of Tuscola's Economic Development Corporation, said on Monday of this week that, to my knowledge, there are still a few stores in operation. As of last week, Sweet Petunia Antiques, Bath & Body Works, Verizon, and Rally Point Fitness. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for January 11, 2026. Please stay tuned.